Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. It's time for the most epic weekend of the year. Saturday, June 18th, it's the Corolla Family Barbecue 2022. Head over to Corolla Drinks to be the first to get your tickets to the Corolla Family Barbecue. This year, headlined by the band Lit. Your ticket includes booze, barbecue, bands, and of course, time to hang out with the Corolla family, all the lackeys, and some of your favorite friends and comedians on the show. Don't wait to buy tickets to this event, because it will sell out. Wine Case Club members are automatically guaranteed tickets. And if you're in the mood to make a weekend out of it, join Lynette and all your favorite lackeys for the Mangria Bar Crawl Los Angeles the night before the barbecue. All tickets and information can be found online at CorollaDrinks.com.
RockAuto.com. Why spend 30 to 50%, even 100% more for the same parts that a chain store or dealership might have? Why spend so much there? Why not go to RockAuto.com? It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Everything from engine control modules to brakes to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few clicks delivered direct to your door. Go to RockAuto.com. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write "doubt" in the "how did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. A church are going to mend it. Get it on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus in New York City. Mark, how say you?
I'm in New York City. I apologize to everybody about the sound. We're trying to figure it out. I've been in Adam Carolla withdrawals for the last 24 hours. I did at your kind of, without you even asking, you were like 1 degree of separation with Megan.
And Megan Kelly?
Yeah. And I did her podcast yesterday. And I've missed her. I remember Megan from many, many years ago when she was a Cub reporter, just starting out when I was doing the Peterson case and back in 2003 or four. And we talked about you. And also, it was good to see her. Not only did you kind of reunite me with her, you also reunited me, and I'll tell this story after we watch a clip, with Greta Van Susteren in a weird way. But she also got me onto CNN, which I thought you would enjoy. And Gary, if you've got the clip, play it for Adam, because this is literally inspired by Adam.
All right, here it is.
I used to watch you for years on CNN, back when CNN was watchable, and you'd give your legal analysis on everything. And then you were gone one day, and I was like, somehow you were linked to Michael Avenatti, and I was like, okay, you must have been temporarily insane, because Mark Garagus is way too smart to associate his brand with that lunatic. So what happened? Why, you don't work there anymore. What happened? And why would you ever have associated with that nutcase?
Well, I represented Michael. So as a client, I mean, he had a DV case and I represented him, and I had known him for number of months. And then the case, as you mentioned, happened in New York. CNN, in their infinite wisdom, decided to cut and run. In fact, I think I famously called them the cut and run network. But they were already kind of descending into this polemic that they've decided, the path they've decided to go down. I think there was some kind of irony that you would see Anderson sitting with Toobin next to him as they're announcing that Cuomo would be suspended. And now I'm seeing where Mr. Zucker is being pilloried for his handling of the situation. And I think the writing's on the wall. There's going to be a shakeup, and the largest stockholder in their merger there has already said they need to get back to what they used to do, which is Malone of the Discovery Channel. So I think within the next 6 weeks, you'll see a reboot there.
Yeah. First off, you know, Megyn Kelly, don't sleep on Megyn Kelly. She is sharp. She's poignant. She's crisp. I mean, she is good at what she does, you know. And the thing I did
an hour 45 with her, and I did it frankly because I think you had said something and they were intrigued by it, and so they reached out to me after they had done it with you, and we mentioned you a couple of times during the hour 45. But I meant it when I said it, and if you watch the podcast I did with her, I've known her since, as she describes it, she was a Cub reporter in 2003, 2004. And I thought she was sharp as shit then. She was a lawyer then, closer to being a lawyer than anything else. And what's amazing to me, and Adam, I don't want to blow smoke up your ass, but when you look at your 2011 book, which was In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks, when you look at where you were with CNN, and by the way, you were early money on CNN when I was still there as a paid contributor. And when you look at some of the other things that you predicted, and when you look at the kind of the idiot squad that I'm dealing with right now, you know, vis-a-vis you, it's amazing to me how you as a, I know the Daily Wire calls you truth yeller, but obviously it's truth teller. You don't get enough credit for being kind of the Mark Twain of this generation.
Well, this generation doesn't know who Mark Twain is. So maybe I am the Mark Twain of this generation.
Yeah, you'll be the Mark Twat of this generation. So,
Megan is one of these people that is, to me, a little bit of a poster child for what's going on in the zeitgeist and where we are sort of politically and beyond, which is she's truthful. She's very intellectually honest. Now that doesn't mean she's right about everything. It just means she's
correct.
Speaking the truth as she knows it.
Can I do a segue? She sits there. I can have a discussion with her. It's very similar to what you and I have done for 6 years. She can tell me how she thinks Scott Peterson is a POS and why she thinks it or this or that. But I can have a discussion with her. I can make my points. She can make her points. She can go off on her tangent. I don't necessarily agree with anything she says when she goes off on the tangent. But it's an intelligent discussion like I have with you, which is why I love you. But it's astonishing to me that this is like the crawl, breaking news. People with different opinions can have a discussion.
Yeah, you know, she's very articulate. She's very bright. She's trained as a lawyer. She's a very experienced broadcaster, and she has opinions. And somehow she is a no-fly zone for everyone on the left, or she's, you know, lunatic fringe. You know, she's lumped in with the tinfoil hat, you know, flat earthers and all that kind of stuff. I've had millions, you know, I find myself oftentimes explaining to people, whether it be Megyn Kelly or Dennis Prager or Tucker Carlson or sometimes you, I find myself explaining to a lot of folks on the left, no, this is a very substantial person. This is a smart person. This is a kind person. This is a generous person. I don't know, you know, the ad hominem thing is insane. I want, and also it's interesting because there's a lot of chutzpah, for lack of a better term. I went out, Tucker Carlson was in town a couple of years ago. And so I said, we did an interview and we did a sort of home and home thing. He did my show, I did his show. And then he was just in town for a couple of days staying at a hotel. So I said, what are you doing tonight? And he said, nothing. I said, well, you want to get some dinner? He said, fine. I said, we'll do dinner, and then I got to go to the Comedy Store and do a set. If you want to come with me, we'll just go into the Comedy Store, which is, you have to picture Tucker Carlson walking into the Hollywood Comedy Store in the middle of Sunset Strip. And he said, yeah, it'd be great. And so we had a boys' date night. We went out to dinner, then we went to the Comedy Store, and I literally just dropped him off at his hotel. When we were done, nice conversation. One of the more interesting and authentic guys I've ever met. And then the following morning was Sunday morning, and I showed up at my warehouse to watch NFL football with the boys, like I'm apt to do. And somebody said, you
know, which is a weekly routine.
Weekly routine. They said, what'd you do last night? I said, well, actually, I went out to dinner with Tucker Carlson, and we went to the Comedy Store. And a couple of guys just looked at me and went, Tucker Carlson? I said, yeah. And they went, bad guy. Bad guy. And I went, well, first off, you've never spoke to him. Secondly, I just told you I went out to dinner with the guy and then went to the Comedy Store. But thirdly, why am I hanging around with bad guys? Like, has anyone ever done that math? I don't like bad guys. I don't like hanging around with bad guys. I don't know where they got it, but they're also imbibed with some kind of chutzpah where they can just look at the guy who went out for the evening with the guy for 5 hours and then look at me and go, bad guy. But by the way, inside of my warehouse, drinking my beer and eating my chicken wings.
And by the way, I think as of today, you probably wrote a check for property taxes, which
right.
was outrageous.
Right.
Which got mailed in. But by the way, Megan is a perfect example of that, because my memory of Megan is forged. And I told her this yesterday, the same way Kimberly Guilfoyle is. I remember Megan, Kimberly Guilfoyle, Greta Van Susteren, all circa 2004. I used to hang out with them. That was, by the way, well before Don Julio 1942. That was back when I was drinking Macallan 18. And I used to sit with the ladies. We would be in court fighting, or I would be fighting with the prosecutors. They would be cheerleading for the prosecutors. And then at night, after I finished doing my homework, I would sit with them. We'd have a drink at the wherever that godforsaken hotel was that I was living. And I would have conversation. We would have intelligent conversation. As you said, you went to dinner. I would have dinner with the ladies. And that's how I remember them. By the way, in the whatever it's been, 24 hours since I did her podcast, the amount of hate directed my way for doing Megyn Kelly has been astonishing to me. I don't know if you get this when you do Truth Yeller or anything else, but me as a, you know, former CNN font of legal knowledge for 20 years, I go on there, I say anything negative about Jeff the fuckhead Zucker, and God forbid, it's it's like he's got fanboys on Twitter.
Yeah, again, they start by pillaring these people, you know, obviously racist and homophobic, misogynistic, whatever it is, white supremacist. And then obviously then it becomes you having a drink with a white supremacist or you going on a podcast.
Right, exactly. You like to hoist a few with the white supremacist.
Right. That's my thing. Anyway, I find her to be delightful. I also find her to be very substantial. And
she's smart as shit. She's smart as shit. She's a trained lawyer. By the way, for all of you, and I hate to say it, hater ho losers, she would be earning, if she wanted, $3 to $8 million a year at 10 different law firms if she wanted to practice law. I don't know that she even makes that much doing what she does now.
All right. So the case of the day is the Jussie Smollett case. Gary was talking to me about you and he on Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, found guilty on 5 of the 6 charges.
Yeah. By the way.
Yes.
And I'll preface it. I think I told Gary and I've said to others, I didn't try this case. I'm not admitted in Illinois to defend this case. I defended him the first time when it was dismissed. I was frankly outraged at what's happened since then. Whether you agree with Jussie or disagree, let me just tell you, anybody who has got a fair mind and looks at this will say it's an outrage. Now, you may not agree with what I think is outrageous, but let me just tell you, he was charged once by Kim Fox, progressive black female prosecutor in Cook County. I represented him then. We had local counsel. We prevailed on her office to dismiss it. He forfeited, one of the things they asked for was a forfeit of $10,000, which was 10% of his $100,000 bail, a acknowledgement of community service, and that was what we considered punishment. Case dismissed over 2 years ago. Then, let me tell you what happened. Then, because there was such public outrage, and it was in large part because this kind of right-left dialectic that has infected the criminal law. And by the way, those of you on the right, every time you slam those on the left for Kyle Rittenhouse, remember, this is the same thing, but the obverse. What they did was they got a retired appellate court white old lady judge to insinuate herself by filing a request for a independent counsel, which, by the way, all of you on the right who slammed Robert Mueller, and by the way, I agreed with because I was slamming 20 years ago Ken Starr for independent counsel. They got another old white judge there to appoint another, guess what, old white former prosecutor, Dan Webb, to become the Office of Special Prosecutor, which I call bullshit on. The same way I call bullshit on Robert Mueller, the same way I call bullshit on Ken Starr. You don't go outside the system to hire private lawyers to do your dirty work. But this guy comes along and he decides, this Dan Webb, he decides he's going to re-examine what the young black progressive prosecutor Ken Fox did. And why that happens, God knows, except unless you want to take out Ken Fox. And if you don't like Ken Fox, I get it. You don't like Gascon in L.A., I get it. But understand what's happening here, because you can be hoisted on this same
petard. You
know, prosecutorial petard. So what do? Dan Webb, while I'm in trial, as Adam knows, in Utah, says we have to have your mitigation evidence right now on Juicy Smollett. And I call him Juicy because I love him, and in paying homage to Dave Chappelle. But I write back to Dan Webb, well, I'm in trial, in a federal trial. This is a case that's already been resolved. You got really no authority. When I'm out of trial, I'll talk to you. He says, no, we got to do it right now. You'd say to yourself, if you were a cynic, why does F to do it right now? Oh, let me guess. Because Kim Fox was up for her primary election. And by the way, Dan Webb's good friend's son was running against her. Oh, so maybe that explains it. And sure enough, he indicts Juicy right before that primary election. Then what happens? Then she survives. Kim survives the primary. She's into the general election. And what do you know? What happens next? This old boy white network in Cook County, which is corrupt as Cook County can be, all of a sudden starts their kind of dance on Juicy's head. And that's what's happened from then till now and during this trial. It's an abomination for everybody who says, well, it was a hoax, or there were these Nigerians, or this or that. I got answers for you. We'll maybe Adam and I will have a call in for an hour, but I will tell you, this was as outrageous a state court prosecutorial gangbang as I've ever seen.
All right. I have many questions, but first, practically, when is sentencing and how does that work?
It's going to be probably next year. He was convicted by 11 whites one black. There were, the prosecution bumped either four or five black jurors, and the judge in his infinite wisdom did not do anything to stop that. I mean, this was a railroad, and I know that it's not popular, and I guess, you know, I've always been attracted to things that aren't popular, but this was as ridiculous a prosecution as I've ever seen.
Well, what's the potential exposure? I mean, what do we...
3 years, basically.
3 years, is that max, or what do you realistically...
Yeah, basically, it depends on how you calculate it, but yeah, that's the max. And by the way, I think everybody involved, the old white cabal trying to take down the Cook County progressive black establishment, understands this case is going to get reversed. All they're doing, they don't give a shit. They just want to kind of run out the clock, get their conviction, pander to the masses, and be done with it.
So you guys are appealing?
Yeah, they'll appeal. Like I said, I'm not admitted.
Right.
So, last time around, the former appellate judge, I don't even remember her name, I affectionately will call her a psychopath. Not only did she come in and try and get Jussie filed on, she then filed a complaint with the California State Bar against me, which was roundly rejected, which just shows you just the kind of the chutzpah and amazing, ridiculous absurdity that is going on in Cook County.
Well, just because it seems to change from municipality to municipality and crime to crime, 3 years max, what does that smell like to you if it's not overturned? How much actual physical prison time are we talking about? 3 years?
By the way, I'll quote Kim Fox originally when people were questioning her, why did you dismiss this? She said, basically, normally we don't even file these cases. And even if we do, there's never any consequence to it. These are disorderly conducts or false statements. I mean, really, Chicago, which has got, you know, for all of you on the right, I agree with you. Any given weekend, you've got 10 to 30 murders happening in Chicago. And this is what we've spent all of our time and resources on. It's a joke.
Well, I agree. And I mean, to the extent, and you and I have lamented this for a long time, that political, the way the wind is blowing politically is now blowing into the courtrooms. And on one side, you got people from January 6 are being charged with posing too close to a statue or loitering or something.
Or loitering. Like, right. Loitering. No bail.
Literally. And the folks on the left would like them put in the hole. Until they grow long gray beards. And then, of course, the people on the right, well, what ends up happening is they go, well, we want our pound of flesh, too, which will completely corrupt and destroy the legal system.
Every time, and mind you, I have professed, I've never been a fan of Trump, except when it comes to criminal justice. But every person who says, why hasn't he been indicted? Where is Merrick Garland? What the hell is he doing? Really, is that what we want? Do we want an America when whoever loses the election becomes the target of the successive or serial Justice Department? It's insanity.
Well, we can talk about Meadows and suing Pelosi and some of that.
By the way, I'd like to talk about Meadows for a second.
Well, wait, I don't want to jump yet. I just want to make sure that I'm clear. The Jussie Smollett case, you say, was a kind of procedure fumbling. I'll put an example out there. There's two ways someone can be found innocent. One is they did not commit the crime, and the other is the cop showed up without a warrant and started collecting stuff and bumbled the case, essentially. You're arguing that they bumbled the case with Jussie Smollett, but you're also sort of arguing that the case didn't go down the way they said it was going down. What is the bigger grievance?
Look, I've got two. Number one, I have cross-examined him when I represented him, and without revealing attorney-client, I will tell you, I didn't see anything that gave me an indication that he was involved in this kind of ludicrous conspiracy. The idea that if you're on the right, and I know this will, you know, make people's heads explode, that you can condemn the Chicago Police Department, the former chief, who I think wasn't he found asleep in a car after he was getting a blowjob from one of his subordinates or something?
Isn't that what happened? I don't remember that one, but Gary can look it up.
Yeah, I think Gary, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that'd be former police chief Eddie Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think his pants were at the ankles and he was asleep. And that happens, you know, I can, you know, been there, done that. You know, you're in the police car.
Yeah, it happens,
you know. Yeah. Yeah, it happens. You got a subordinate, you fall asleep in the car, your pants are at your ankles. I get it. But if you're going to go, that route and get blowjobs in the police or the squad car with your subordinates, you probably shouldn't be going out putting out information that's demonstrably wrong. And that's what he did. He put out all kinds of misinformation. And by the way, he's not the only one who kind of cut and run like CNN. CNN's anchor, Don Lemon, I'd like, Gary, let's put out something to his people, because Don Lemon took a shot at Jussie.
We have the clip. Let me hit a spot.
Yeah, just take a look at that, because I'll break a little news on that too, Adam.
All right.
I know this is like a pandering to Adam for an hour, but I've got quite a bit that you're going to like, Adam.
All right. Well, we'll get into that. First, I'll tell you about Cerebral. Last year, anxiety, depression rates doubled in the U.S. It can take weeks to get traditional therapy just to book an appointment. Cerebral, online mental health service that offers prescription, medication, counseling, and therapy for anxiety, depression, ADHD, insomnia, and more. One of the few services that provides prescription medication online through a licensed provider and ships meds straight to your door. Unlimited messaging with your care team. Connect with your counselor and therapist on your own schedule through your laptop or Cerebral's mobile app. Simone Biles is their chief impact officer. Yeah, we know her. She's one of the greatest, maybe the greatest Olympic athlete of all time, I would say, but had a couple of issues. She's a huge advocate for reducing stigma around getting treatment. It's Cerebral, right, Gary?
That's right. Listeners of this program can receive 65% off your first month of medication, management, and care counseling at GetCerebral.com/doubt. Go to GetCerebral.com/doubt for 65% off your first month. That's just a total of $30 to get started. Join Cerebral today on their mission to make quality mental health care accessible and affordable for all.
All right, we have a clip to play of Don Lemon. Not sure what happened to Mark, but he may have popped off for a second, but
it appears he's still there. He's just stopped his video, so we'll soldier on without him, and hopefully he's listening along.
Let's just play the Don Lemon's.
Trust me, I'm here. I'm throwing the softballs to you too.
All right,
you guys softballs on and take a look at this, because I got a lot to say about
this. All right, now this is Don Lemon speaking to whom?
This is Don Lemon speaking to.
Go ahead, Mark. Well, let me tell you about this guy. This guy was, but this guy, so-called legal commentator Joey Jackoff Jackson, was the one who told me in CNN at the time, right before we got the case dismissed, why don't you just plead him guilty? I said, dude, are you a criminal defense lawyer?
All right, we'll play the clip here.
And a judge will speak to what specifically those consequences will be.
They had to make up too many lies to why I didn't want to do certain things, or like to cover like another lie, and that, you know, I guess he got caught up in that because he took the stand himself. He got angry with the prosecutor as the prosecutor poked holes in his story, calling, you know, only the only other witnesses liars.
We good? Yeah. So now Lemon was.
Can we just go back to that for a second?
Yes.
Don Lemon talking to Joey Jackson about this case may be the single most ironic and ridiculous thing I've ever seen. By the way, Don, you failed to mention that Juicy testified under oath that you were the person who texted him that Chicago police didn't believe him. Did you forget about that? Did you not think that was relevant as a news anchor? By the way, Don, do you want me, and I'd invite you, Don, to come on next week when we do Reasonable Doubt. I'd like to talk to you, Don, about the text that you and I had about me representing Juicy, because you might, I might be able to trigger your memory as to what actually happened, Don, before you go on TV and talk about Juicy as a liar, because it sure seems to me that you're right on the end of that parade in New York that's the master of ceremonies is Cuomo and Zucker is the court jester. And you're right behind it if we're going to talk about truth here.
Well, I hope he takes your challenge up.
He'll never take it up. CNN, as we started here, CNN has degenerated into probably, I mean, people make fun of MSNBC. At least they had Brian Williams, who was kind of sardonic in the 11 o'clock hour. CNN and Zucker, and take a look. Can we show Zucker for a second? Can we show this guy? I want to psychoanalyze this guy for a second, Adam. Remember, this was the guy at NBC who hired and made Donald Trump. You realize that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah, exactly. So then he goes and he becomes head of CNN and promptly flushes that network. There we go. Okay, that is the most Photoshopped
I've never seen a more flattering picture of Jeff Zucker.
Of Jeff Zucker?
Well, can I make this analogy, Mark? You deal with high-profile people. You've had your Michael Jacksons and your Chris Browns and things like that. And people always kind of say,
Gary, give me a better picture. I can't look at this.
This is a better picture.
You got to get me a better picture.
Well, just get
give me a picture where he's salivating.
Get the one.
There you go. This guy is the anti-Vinny Tortinich. Right? I mean, this guy is the opposite of no sugar, no grains. He's all sugar, all grains.
All right. Can I make this analogy?
Yes, please, Adam. Stop me. Stop me before I get sued by the Cut and Run Network.
Well, I will say this. We've been lamenting to some degree what has become of CNN over the weeks and months and years we've done this show. I've been the kind of tip of the spear. But here's where I think it went wrong.
The tip of the spear? You were about as early money as it gets.
Well, tell me if this analogy rings true to you. And as I was saying, you have represented your Michael Jacksons and your Chris Browns and a lot of very notable people. And I'm not asking you to impugn them, but I am saying a lot of times people, when they say, what happened, you know, to this celebrity, or why did they think this was a good idea, or how did MC Hammer go through all his money with his entourage? And people always say they surrounded themselves with too many yes men. You need some guys from the old neighborhood. You need some folks going, I don't think that's a great idea, or you should think about that, or maybe you're wrong. And when a celebrity, we all understand it, that when a celebrity gets too many yes men around them, sometimes it leads to their demise. And CNN...
Case in point, Exhibit A, Alec Baldwin doing his interview.
Right.
Go back to you.
Right. Okay. So when you're a news outlet, you can't afford to surround yourself with too many yes men, because it means you get the story wrong. And I feel like CNN, they purged their network of people like you, of people like Dr. Drew, you know, the aforementioned Megyn Kelly, Adam Carolla, no longer welcome. They purged everyone who had an opinion that may not have dovetailed perfectly with their own, which means they're going to start getting things wrong because you need to be challenged all the time in order to have the muscles to push back and spirited debate and arguments and things of that nature. And at some point, they just decided, you know, you take COVID-19. The only people you see on CNN are the people who agree with everything, all of the narrative that CNN is pushing. How about get one of the many, many, many doctors on the other side to come on and offer some debate, offer some pushback, some alternatives? They get people on their side, and they're like, yeah, ivermectin is horse paste. Good. Kids under five are in great danger. They need to be vaccinated. People need to be masked outdoors. And they all just sit there and nod their head in bovine agreement. And my point is, of course you're going to get things wrong if you simply surround yourself with people who tell you you're right all the time. There's many qualified doctors, academics, and researchers that have a completely different opinion of what's going on. You know, they took a guy like Alex Berenson. This guy is a very independent reporter. He does his homework. He does his research. He's no longer welcome there anymore because he disagrees with your narrative on COVID.
Let me just tell you one thing that I find hilarious. They have so little institutional knowledge. They have so little kind of news credentials. They make the LA Times look good. Can you imagine me saying that? Because the LA Times may be the single worst legacy paper of all time. But they're sending emails. I've got three of them in the last 2 weeks, where they're asking Tina, my partner, to be the kind of funnel for all their Juicy Smollett coverage. I mean, really? Are you guys this brain dead that you don't remember the Don Lemon connection? You don't remember the Jeff Zucker foibles? That you don't understand why I would just as soon step over CNN like a piece of dog shit on the on Fifth Avenue? And by the way, the CNN, I think, I was finding this hilarious. You know, they fire Chris Cuomo, and a buddy of mine is representing him now to sue CNN. I may join in just for sport. But I think they were lamenting, or it was being lamented, that he was their highest rated show. Do you know what their numbers were, Adam? Do you have any idea?
I think we discussed this, maybe 936,000 views on their highest rated show.
Isn't that shocking to you? Let's just try to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges. ACS, how many shows do you do a week?
Five.
Okay. And five, CNN has 24-hour, 7-day-a-week coverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. ACS does five shows a week. How many downloads do you get a month?
Oh, God, a month. I don't know, maybe about 10 million.
Yeah. Do you know that CNN, on their broadcast coverage, on an average week, has a fraction of that? I mean, it's astonishing to me. And by the way, speaking of failures, LA Times, do you know how many subscribers they have? By the way, before you answer that question, how many followers do you have on Twitter, for instance?
650,000? I don't know. Yeah.
648.9,
maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. 648.960.
Okay.
Gary, what do you think the number of subscribers to the LA Times is? What if I told you 400,000?
Yeah. Well, again, it's about a course correction. I always talk about the course correction. and why not start that? Our guest, we do have a guest. We haven't spoken about this guest. Jeff Price is going to join us. Mark knows something about Jeff Price, and so does so does Gary. Let me hit a spot here first. Fight Camp. Want to make 2022 your best year yet? Revolutionize how you work out. Fight Camp. Learn to box and kickbox at home with world-class programming, elite trainers, premium equipment, and smart tech. Thousands of classes, new workouts added each week. Fight Camp provides real-time data during your workout so you can track your progress, work toward guided goals, and see just how much you're improving day to day, week to week. Full body workout, best of both, cardio, strength training as well. Also keeps your mind engaged because you're following instruction, you're learning combinations. Comes with all the gear you need, freestanding punching bag, boxing gloves, quick hand wraps, and smart punch trackers as well. It is Fight Camp, right, Gary?
That's right. Now is the best time to get your Fight Camp. Take advantage of their holiday deal going on now. If you purchase this December, you'll get an additional pair of gloves for free. Just go to joinfightcamp.com/doubt to get an additional pair of gloves for free during December. Go to joinfightcamp.com/doubt. joinfightcamp.com/doubt.
All right. So, Gary, why don't you set the table with Jeff Price here?
Yeah, I will before we go to our break. Jeff Price is represents a bunch of comedians, the estate of Richard Pryor, for instance, of Robin Williams. And he's basically in a situation where he's trying to represent the artists. When you are a comedian, for instance, and you have an album on Spotify, there are two licenses that streamer needs to acquire. They need to acquire one from the record label that you made the deal with to distribute it. And then if it was you who was writing the special, for instance, Adam, they need a separate license with you directly because you wrote the material that is underlying. Mm-hmm. So apparently what a lot of these streamers were doing was they got the licenses from the record labels where they have, you know, big deals overarching for everything. They ignored the deals with the artists themselves, but put their material up on the streamer, and one of the record labels came a calling, and then they just ripped it all down because they can argue that they were in good faith trying to follow the law when they realized their error.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll talk to the man behind this, Jeff Price, right after this. RockAuto.com. Why spend 30 to 50%, even 100% more for the same parts that a chain store or dealership might have? Why spend so much there? Why not go to RockAuto.com? It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, everything from engine control modules to brakes to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few clicks delivered direct to your door. Go to rockauto.com. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write doubt in the how did you hear about us box so they know we sent you. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, Jeff Price has joined us. WorldCollections.com is the website. Jeff, we're on the subject, or you're on the subject, of comedy albums, the internet, compensation. So set the table for us.
Sure. And thanks for having me. So, you know, it's interesting. There is an each
before
piece.
Before we get into the interesting, can I just?
Oh, did I say thing? World Collections?
Absolutely.
Sorry.
I thought so, yeah.
I meant wordcollections.com. Sorry.
Yeah, but I more want to ask the question I asked before we went on the air. You're 54 and you got a good head of hair and you don't dye it, right?
Yeah, you know, I was dyeing my hair since I was 16 until about 52, 51. And, you know,
last year.
It was a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, but you know what Adam calls this? Adam calls this, Adam, silver, what do you call it? Silver fox thirst trap?
Well, that's Dr. Drew, so we're going to have to come up with a different title for Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, we'll just call you Drew Light.
Well, I was a goth kid, I was a punk, you know, so my hair was every flavor, every color. But ultimately, as I got older, at a certain point, I just felt like this is ridiculous. So I
A lawyer?
No, I just play one on TV. Honestly,
okay, that's kind of like me, so I relate to that. But yeah, what would like, you, how do you classify yourself? What's your title?
You know, I'm the CEO and founder of Word Collections. And before that, I was the CEO and founder of a global copyright administration company called Audium. And then before that, I was the CEO and founder of the largest music distribution company in the world I created called TuneCore. And then before that, I ran a music record label called Spin Art Records for about 20 years, releasing artists you never heard of, except maybe the Pixies and Echo and the Bunnymen. So there's my illustrious
Echo and the Bunnymen, I remember. But did you have lawyers on retainer? You must have.
You must have, absolutely.
Like a copyright phalanx of them.
No, you know, it's interesting. You know, Tiger Woods' dad put a golf club into Tiger Woods' hands, right? And the kid could play golf. I don't know what it is about copyright, but it seems to be my God-given talent. So I read documents more boring than watching paint dry, but I'm able to retain and understand the information. And it comes in very helpful with copyright administration, understanding the rules and regulatory requirements. So it's just something I became very good at. And frankly, I read the documents. You can't win the game if you don't know the rules.
Can I ask you a question before you get into what Adam's going to ask you about? Because one of the things that's always fascinated me about this area was Napster. And when Napster got kind of gangbanged, legally gangbanged, were you in the space at that point?
Yeah, I had met Gene Hoffman and Bob Cohn. So Gene Hoffman at the time, I believe, was 20 years old. And Bob Cohn is one of the preeminent music copyright attorneys on the planet with Cohn on music licensing. This book in academia and law offices. And they started a company called Good Noise, which became eMusic. Sounds like you know this already.
I know and all of this, which is fascinating to me because people don't understand. Apple now has a multi-billion dollar business that is basically on the hump or the third generation of all of this illegality, right?
That's right, yeah. So eMusic, Good Noise became eMusic, and it became the first online music service selling music as individual songs as download as MP3s. And this was in like 1998. So I met Gene and Bob when they were first starting.
Adam, you remember MP3s?
Yeah, I do, although I never knew how to work a computer, so, you know.
Yeah, but MP3s were, Jeff, what was the delivery vehicle for those?
Wow, this is going down a great rabbit hole. So the Fraunhofer Institute out of Germany.
Jesus, I can't believe you cited that. That's you really are kind of a music piracy nerd.
Yeah, I'm totally nerding out on this stuff. So they created this technology, compression technology. So Adam, basically, when you have a CD and there's music on it, right, it's digital. It's not vinyl where it's analog. So to make this digital file that a computer or a CD player can play, it's a really big file. And you go back to the AOL dial-up, you can't move these files around because they're freaking huge and you're on, you know, a dial-up baud rate modem. So this technology comes, it's called compression technology. And what it does is it uses an algorithm to take a huge file and make it small. And then when you listen to it, it tries to fill in the gaps, but the quality is not as good. But it takes, you know, a 50 megabyte file and makes it 3 megabytes. And once it's 3 megabytes, right, that's an MP3. You can now more easily email it and move it around digitally on the internet. So to Adam's point, though, you're right, man. It's people couldn't listen to these files. Go back to, you know, 1997 on your Dell computer with crappy speakers. And how do you do, you know, so then came these software programs like Winamp, which would open up an MP3 file and play. But it wasn't until Creative Labs shows up with these things called portable jukeboxes, which tried to make it easier to play these files. But you know, Adam, it's the same thing with my mom. She can't set the clock on the VCR.
And
right?
Then guess what came along? The iPod.
All right.
Yeah. And that's what made it easy. And then when that happened and Napster had trained everybody on how to download music and he's getting, so all of a sudden it was this perfect amalgamation and bam, digital took off. And
yeah, but part of what you skipped over is Napster went up and down and was the cloud.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, so my entree point into all this was with eMusic and Good Noise, where I got in at ground zero as like employee number 4. My record label, Spin Art, became the first record label to put its entire catalog from Frank Black and Pixies on down available for download as MP3s.
I love the fact that we've now mentioned to the Pixies twice.
Yeah.
Which in the history of Reasonable Doubt hasn't been mentioned once, but the Pixies twice in one show is great.
Well, I love the fact that we even got to mention the Pixies in this. This is great. Much more relaxed.
Did they sing Here Comes Your Man?
Absolutely.
Oh my God, Adam, Adam is like a savant.
Score one for the Corolla.
Yes. Yeah, well, listen.
People don't understand what a freaking savant he is. How did you pull that out of your...
I like that song. I listened to K-Rock way back in the day, obviously ended up on K-Rock at some point, and I just have a good mind for a good audible mind.
Do you remember Rodney on Sundays playing the Pixies? It was just... Rodney on the Rock. Rodney used to play the Pixies. And that was back in the days of 999 and the Dead Kennedys and my favorite band of all time. What's her name? So, I Love You Better If We Sleep Together. Anyway, go on.
Romeo Cabaret Voltaire.
Romeo Void.
Romeo Void. Romeo Void.
Ah, yeah. See, I got the nerd.
Yeah, you are, Adam, you're just a...
I beat Jeff in music trivia. All right, but Mark, your favorite band of all time is System of a Down because they're the only all Armenian band.
It's all Armo. They're spectacular, and there's nobody that competes with Serge and the boys.
All right.
The coolest thing about all this for me is I go back to like my parents, my grandparents, you know, they're listening to Benny Goodman or, you know, Doris Day or whatever. And I'm thinking when I'm 80, God forbid, I make it there or 90. And let's assume I have grandkids.
About the Dead Kennedys.
Yes, I remember when the Dead Kennedys, you know.
Exactly. I can remember Oingo Boingo when they were playing high schools in L.A.
All right, well, let's fast forward to what brought us all together in the first place, which is comedy.
Which is Adam the Savant, which is going to be my new TV series. By the way, Adam, I have to go in a second. I got to pitch this to ABC.
Please, have a cup of coffee first. No, wait. Drink some buttermilk. I think that's a better that's better. He's got his Don Julio on him.
It's all right, buttermilk with bourbon.
Yeah. So, Jeff, sorry. So, comedy. Where are we at? We're talking about the comedy, digital, written versus. Will you tell us?
Sure. Well, the first thing is, as you're probably aware, the whole world has moved to digital. Right. Everything is consumed digitally, be it on demand streaming or YouTube or Spotify or Apple Music and so forth. So that's the first thing. The second thing is these entities don't create, in many cases, don't create the things that they're streaming. You know, Spotify doesn't go out and write, you know, Hotel California and record it. They go, you license it from someone else. So in order to use someone else's stuff, you need to get their permission. That means you need to get a license. And with a license typically becomes a royalty payment. And this is where the problem comes. And I'm going to use music as a reference point. Arista Records hired Whitney Houston to sing the song, I Will Always Love You. And that recording is owned by Arista Records. But Dolly Parton wrote the lyric and the melody, right? And those are the two separate copyrights. There's one for the recording. That's owned by Arista. And a second separate copyright is owned by Dolly Parton for the lyric and melody that got recorded.
Right.
So every single time that recording streams, let's say, on Spotify, there are two separate licenses and two separate payments that have to be made. One goes to Arista Records and a second separate one goes to Dolly Parton.
Right.
Now with music, there's mechanisms and infrastructure that got put in place. But for literary works, for spoken word, which we call literary works, that's the legal termination, legal term for them. The mechanisms weren't put in place. There's just nothing there. And there should be, because it's the same copyright. It's in the same copyright law. It's all the same thing. So just because Robin Williams says the words, reality, what a concept, as opposed to sings them, doesn't mean he doesn't have a copyright.
Right.
The end result to all of this is when these recordings go live in Spotify or Apple Music, or they get broadcast, let's say, on Sirius XM satellite. These services seem to have the license for the recording, the Arista Records side. But for spoken word, they didn't get that second separate license. So the end result is when George Carlin wrote Seven Words You Can't Say on Television and recorded it for Atlantic Records in 1972 on his album Class Clown, Atlantic Records owns the recording, but George Carlin wrote the words that got recorded. And when that album streams, one payment's supposed to go to Atlantic Records and a second separate payment and license for George Carlin. But guess what? They forgot, or they chose not to get that second separate license from George Carlin. So the end result is he's not getting licensed and paid, and his copyright is infringed upon. And that creates a lot of problems.
All right. Well, let me, semi-challenge you on this from a layman's perspective. George Carlin is Dolly Parton in this case, right? But in Dolly Parton's case, she wrote the song and she recorded the song. And then it went to Arista and it went to Whitney Houston. And, you know, it's the song existed. With George Carlin, the song, so to speak, didn't exist. You know, he wrote it, but it was never an entity. He wrote it and then recorded it. And so in a sense, it was like a guy who said, maybe, you know, you work for DuPont or you work for 3M, and then you come into work and you invented Post-its or something. And then you go, that's my idea. And they go, no, you were being paid. You're gun for hire. You're on the clock. We own Post-its. Is that where it gets a little gray?
No, but it is a great observation. As a matter of fact, what you just described is the way the music industry used to work. If you go back to before the Beatles, which is really, you know, there are others that wrote their own songs, clearly. But the Beatles kind of changed the landscape because they wrote their own songs and recorded them. And if you go back before that, we had something called Tin Pan Alley mm-hmm. here in New York City, right? Where you literally, Paul Simon and Neil Sedaka, I think, they were hired by companies, the way you just described. They were employees of a company.
Carol King.
There you go. And they would write songs, and those songs were owned by their employer. And in those cases, what you've just described makes perfect sense. It's not theirs. They might have written it, but they don't own it. George Carlin wasn't hired by someone else to write his own stuff. George Carlin wrote his own stuff. So when you have a song or a comedy routine in your head, you don't have a copyright. But the minute you make it tangible, meaning you either write it down or record it, bam, you get a copyright that instant. And with that copyright, you get what's called six rights types that dictate how the thing can be used. And I won't going to bore you with the menu of them, but how an entity wants to use your stuff, they have to get some variation cocktail mix of these six rights. So George Carlin, the minute it became tangible, meaning he either wrote it down or he recorded it, bam, there's two copyrights. And because George was not a work for hire for his own words, he owns that copyright. It's his. And as such, you need to go and get a license.
Is this disputed in the law anywhere? I mean, are there people who go, no, that's not, we disagree with that? Or is this just the law?
It is the law. Actually, here, I'll totally geek out on you. So 17 USC 102, it's called subject matter of copyright in general. And yeah, I'm looking at a cheat sheet here. Okay. This is the part of the law that shows that spoken word, literary works, and musical works get a copyright. It literally has them in like the same sentence. And then 17 USC 106 is the exclusive rights in copyrighted works. So this says, here are the rights types you get with your copyright. And again, it uses literary works and musical works in the same sentence. So there's no debate that there's a copyright.
But would the record label for George Carlin say, yes, he created the words and he executed the words, and then we paid him, we own it lock, stock, and barrel. That's all ours. Part of what we paid for is the words and the execution.
So, you know, and another great point, and that boils down to the legal contracts. What did the contract between George Carlin and Atlantic Records say? And because it's the music industry and the way we all grew up and the way contracts are written, they always bifurcate. They always separate the two different rights. They say, hey, man, we're going to control the recording. But the second thing, the literary work or the lyric and melody, which is called a musical composition, you get to own that. And that income is going to go to you regardless of what's going on over here for the recording. That's your, and it literally segments them out in contracts. They're called controlled composition clauses.
And then how does it work for the folks who do not do all their own material? Somebody else writes their material.
So, you know, I was thinking about that. Let me give you two prime examples. One is Ann Coulter, right? She had the Ann Coulter roast. I think it was on Comedy Central. But anyway, she didn't write her own jokes. Somebody else did. So she's
we're getting into dangerous territory.
Well, I'm not going to
writing their own jokes. Adam, Gary, do you want to jump in here? This might be a problem.
Well, keep going. I'm sorry.
And another one, you know, another person extraordinarily talented who did write many of his own jokes, but would also hire others, Rodney Dangerfield.
Right? Sure.
So it's much like
you can get the Donald Trump of comedy.
Would Rodney Dangerfield, would his estate say
did he really need somebody to write his wife jokes?
If you tell enough jokes, you're going to need a little support. I'm here to tell you. But I will say this: his estate would say, "No, we paid for the jokes. These guys were compensated, just like." You buy a hamburger. You were compensated. Yep. That's it. You're not entitled to anymore. Would that be an argument they would make?
Yeah, it's called a work for hire. Hey, I'm going to hire you to write me jokes, and then I'm going to own what you write because that's the nature of our contractual relationship. It's also interesting in the music industry, you have people that can write songs but can't really perform them, and they'll write them and give them to other people to perform. So
that's Adam's take on Joan Jett.
I like Adam. Leave Adam alone.
Adam doesn't think Joan Jett.
I'm not a Joan Jett fan.
He's not a Joan Jett fan. I like Joan Jett. I think she's got kind of these anthems, but Adam and I disagree.
She's got Crimson and Clover. She didn't write that. There's Tommy James and the Shondells. And she's got I Love Rock and Roll, which was written by...
I love name Rock and Roll is the best.
She didn't write either one of those songs. That's why I don't.
Yeah, but how about Van Halen and Panama? What is it?
Panama? Panama? Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Mark, don't free associate for 2 minutes.
So the things that I mean,
how long are we going on this?
We're going to let Jeff bring it home. I just want to know.
Okay. I think Adam's trying to get some free legal advice here, Jeff.
I'm not a lawyer.
I got a life to lead.
But you hire them on TV. So
I just want to ask Jeff, finally, what bottom line, sort of what does this mean for comedy and spoken word on the internet?
Am I allowed to use profanity?
Yes.
Okay. It means comedians are getting fucked again. It means their works and their recordings are being used by the most valuable companies on this planet to drive revenue and market share, and they're not getting properly licensed and paid. When somebody like, I don't know, the Richard Pryor estate, Dane Cook, Adam Sandler, Margaret Cho, go through the list of comedians and their recordings.
So I have a question, Jeff.
Hold on.
If I comment when Adam says, what do you think about the Smollett verdict? And I say, Jussie Smollett, that French actor, am I infringing on Dave Chappelle?
I do not believe you would be in that context, no. But I'm not a lawyer.
All right, Jeff.
I'm trying to give the closure on this.
Closure
is... The broadcast radio, SiriusXM, Pandora, Spotify, etc. They need the two licenses. They need to make the two payments. They're not. And so the end result, comedians are getting fucked. There's over 1 trillion streams of these recordings globally in the past 8 years.
Yeah,
over
if the comedians wait, are getting fucked, how wait. Are the lawyers doing?
Oh, they're doing great. There's over 1 billion dollars in royalties that would have been generated and paid that have been paid. A law is there. So the end result of this is they're now caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and that opens up liability for them. They could be sued for willful copyright infringement, which is up to $150,000 for each infringement. So 10 comedy routines, 10 times 150,000.
But now, lawyers do that on contingency?
Sure, lawyers can do it on a contingency. And
okay, so lawyers win. Okay. Lawyers win, comedians lose.
No,
that will be the title of
this. No, the comedians' rights are what get paid. The comedians get this money, and they need to be licensed and paid.
But so,
no,
Jeff,
the lawyers will fuck the comedians.
Is this going to be like a class action thing?
It could be, right? A class action needs a certain number of plaintiffs, and this certainly meets the bar. This is a global endemic problem that needs to be corrected, that has been ignored. And there is going to be a seismic shift become of this. It's going to take litigation. It is. There's no way around this. The record labels are blaming Spotify. Spotify is blaming the record labels. Between them, there's a huge freaking pot of money. Someone's responsible, and it's going to take a judge to determine who it is. But you can't use someone else's stuff. You want to use it? Ask permission, get a license, pay a commensurate royalty, and the entity or person that earned it should get paid it, just like this podcast.
I hope I can sit home and watch some daytime TV and see one of those class action lawsuits commercials saying,
Are you a comedian? Do you want to make money? Do you have mesothelioma?
Mesothelioma.
We are going to represent you.
All right,
what,
Jeff.
Gregos?
Wordcollections.com is where you can go. Look, if you're a comedian and you'd like to find out more about this, or someone who might want to represent comedians, talk to Jeff Price. Jeff, thank you for carving out some time for us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Have fun with the Pixies. Mark, I'm going to let you find that buttermilk.
Because I'm having way too much fun.
Mark's having way too much fun. I'm going to tell you guys about Geico here. Do you own?
Adam, I'll see you on the other side.
Okay? On the other side. Geico, do you own? Do you rent your home? Well, sure, you do one or the other, and I bet you work hard. And, you know, it's easy. Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save and how easy it is when you go to geico.com today. That is geico.com. All right. Wednesday, coming up this Wednesday. Doing some live shows. That'll be December 15th at the Bray Improv. Early show, there's some tickets left for. Late show, pretty much sold out. Maybe a couple left. Go to amcurl.com and check it out. We're doing our Daily Wire taping for that. You can also check out all our movie offerings at Pluto TV, channel 687. We got all the docs and all the racing stuff, and Adam Carolla Goes Racing is all up there. And then we got... next Wednesday, Thursday, we'll be in Portland, Oregon at Helium Comedy Club, December 22nd, 23rd. And until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos and Jeff Price saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Geico, do you own? Do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. You work hard enough. How about you do a little bundle? Bundle with Geico. Make it easy to bundle the homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got enough to do. You're busy these days. Save a bunch of money. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you visit geico.com and get to bundling.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike.
And this is Gibby.
And we're the hosts of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. If you haven't already, we'd love to invite you to come check us out. Starting in January of 2017, we've amassed over 230 episodes of some of the most intriguing unsolved cases in true crime history. We cover some of the very big unsolved cases, but we also like to cover some of the lesser known cases, some that you may have never heard of. We dive into the details. We talk about the victims, their life, the circumstances around their disappearance or murder. murder, and we cover the potential suspects and persons of interest. We try to give you all the known facts you need to satisfy your amateur detective. We like to think that we don't take ourselves all that seriously, but we take true crime very seriously. You can listen to True Crime All the Time Unsolved now on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know you want to.